In an hour, we'll give away Caps tickets on G&D. We're brought to you by the law firm Condori & Murad. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, and probate administration. Their attorneys do it all, and they're here to protect you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their team today at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. Danny, what did we do for lunch today?
I went to Rasa. Rasa. So I played pickleball. Great pickleball game. Brian
you
was there. Yeah.
Played
so
pickleball?
I haven't played in months.
All day long Monday?
Yeah, played for a couple hours. Today is? Brian was there. Alex was there. You'll never guess who else was. Bruce. Dude, Bruce posted.
When is Ked coming over?
He couldn't come this week. We're going to do it next week. I tried to hit him up for nice weather.
I can't believe Danny played pickleball today. Color me shocked.
I haven't played in months. I literally have not. You can be as sure as you want. I have not played in months. I was terrible today. I got my hiney kicked.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah, Evan whooped my butt today.
Let's go to the Rude games, guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Talk to our buddy, the Hall of Famer, David Aldridge, covers the Commanders and all things DC sports as a columnist in The Athletic, has been writing thoughtful pieces on the Commanders here at the end of the season and what lies ahead. David, it's Grant and Danny. Good to talk to you again. How are you?
Great, fellas. How are you?
Very well.
How surprised were you by the divorce with Cliff Kingsbury?
A little. I mean, shocked, no. A little surprised that they couldn't work it out. You know, you think that when the season's done and everybody can kind of calm down a little bit, because, you know, this is very emotional. Guys get very emotional after wins, after losses, and certainly after a bad season like they had. I thought, well, maybe they'll take a day or two and then they'll figure out a common ground. They didn't. That was a bit surprising. Shocked? I wouldn't say shocked, no. I would have been shocked if they had kept Joe Witt. That would have shocked me.
Yes. I think Joe Witt would have been shocked too, maybe pleasantly
exactly.
So.
Exactly.
Who was more responsible, do you think, for Kingsbury's dismissal, Peters or Quinn?
Oh, I don't know. You know, Grant, that's it's hard to kind of put a percentage on it. This guy's was responsible for 63% and the other guy was responsible for 37%. I don't know. I think the injury to Jaden in the Seattle game was a shock to the whole organization. And really kind of forced some really hard questions to start being asked. Like, what are we doing? This is our franchise quarterback. We can't just keep running him out there because we feel like it or because, you know, he's fun to watch. Like, we have to be more mindful of mitigating risk, not eliminating risk. You can't eliminate risk. It's football and it's very violent. But mitigating it, like, there's things that we can do to put him in, to expose him to fewer potential shots. There's things we can do. And I think that game kind of woke everybody up a little bit. And I certainly don't think, let's put it this way. I don't think Adam Peters was going to sit idly by and not say anything. If this is how he genuinely felt, my guess is that maybe it took Quinn a little longer because he and Cliff were close and had a good relationship. And Dan really does want to defer to the coordinators. It took him a very long time to kind of step in and do things. So I would say if you're asking me to take a guess, and it would be a guess, probably more Peters than Quinn, but I don't think Quinn's number is zero.
David Aldridge with us here on Grant and Danny. David, right about a year ago, I sat in this very chair from PVI Office Furniture, and I said, mm-hmm. I can't believe how lucky they are they get to keep the entire staff. The continuity on this staff is unbelievable. Usually after an NFC title game appearance, you get picked over and you kind of have to rebuild the thing. That was about a year mm-hmm. ago. How did we get mm-hmm. here from there?
I mean, it's pretty simple. The exact inverse of the season they had last year. It's not good when both of your coordinators get cashiered on the same day. Like, that's not good. You can't spin it as this is a good day for the organization. It's a bad day for the organization. But if the Commanders had gone to Philly and won that game. Now, they didn't. They got destroyed. I get that. But if they had gone in there, they were on a roll, maybe they get on the heater of all heaters, and they win that game, and they're in the Super Bowl, No one would have been shocked if Cliff Kingsbury had left after last season and gone to be a head coach somewhere. No one would have been shocked if Joe Witt had left last season and become a head coach somewhere. Nobody. Nobody. So this is the result of failure. That's why we're where we are. Because they went 5-12 and looked bad doing it. And failure creates a urgency to change that sometimes maybe, you know, sometimes I think it's overwrought, but I get it. You know, these are very competitive people. They do not like this. They do not like the way that they played this year. And they want to change it. And I think the proof is in the pudding that they moved on from a guy that had a really, really good season last year with a rookie quarterback. Like, had an incredibly successful rookie season. And they moved on from him because there were just some things he didn't want to do to change a little bit. And that's kind of what I was getting at today when I wrote, like, everybody, look, you have to change. In life, you have to change. You can't be the same person all the time, and I'm just going to do it this way, and I never – you have to change. And Jane Daniels is going to have to change, and Adam Peters is going to have to change, and Dan Quinn's going to have to change for this thing to have any chance to work.
Yeah, check out the piece from David Aldridge. Great column, Commander's Future Depends on Flexibility, from Daniels, Quinn, and Peters in The Athletic. Now, I want to go back to something you had said, which was, you know, you think maybe this had something to do with the injuries or the Seattle game. Drill down on that for me a little bit, because he never got hurt on a designed run. He only really got hurt scrambling. The last one against Seattle was an RPO, which you can make the case they should have been calling at that point of the game. But it was an RPO where Dan Quinn said publicly, and from what I was told privately, he shouldn't have been running anyway. Like, they have never run on that RPO. The play's there in the end zone. So it's mostly choices by Daniels to run, who chooses to run at one of the highest rates we've seen in the league in a long, long time. Should Cliff Kingsbury be held accountable for that?
For that one play, probably not. But again, it's about what's the best way to utilize Jaden Daniels going forward? Is it to put him in shotgun every play? Is it to have a whole bunch of RPOs in your offense? Is it to get away from the run? Not, they didn't abandon the run. I'm not saying that. They got away from it, though, in games where they didn't have to get away from the run. And again, what I'm talking about is mitigating risk, not eliminating it. And if it seems to me, I wasn't in the room when they had the meeting, but it seems to me that Cliff Kingsbury said, I'm not changing my offense. This is my offense. This is what I do. And they said, you got to change the offense or we can't go forward anymore. And he said, I'm not changing. And they said, well, we can't go forward anymore. Now, with something else, I would, you know, maybe the reporting will come out in the next few weeks, but I don't think it was anything more than that. And again, I think the organization, looking at it, said, Jaden Daniels got hurt 3 times in 7 games. That cannot happen going forward. Whether it's Jaden's fault or somebody else's fault, that can't happen. They were incredibly lucky that he didn't suffer a catastrophic injury, being injured 3 separate times in the season to the point where he couldn't play the next game. They were incredibly lucky. That does not usually happen with quarterbacks. Usually, if you get hurt 3 times, one of those 3 puts you on the shelf for a long time. And they got lucky. And it can't happen again. And so I think that's where they're like, all right, what's the best way to give us the best chance of keeping Jaden Daniels healthy and upright as long as possible?
David, you touched on it, but I want to go to the Dan Quinn angle on this. These are 2 handpicked coordinators. He could have picked a lot of OCs. One was, you know, the DC's his buddy that he's worked with before, gave him a shot, doesn't work. Maybe less emphasis there, but the OC, that's kind of what you decided to run, and then that guy showed up and they ran that sort of stuff. What does it say for him in terms of maybe the sands in the hourglass now starting to run out for him in terms of his future here?
There is no question. He's on the clock, for sure. I mean, you don't usually get to pick 3 coordinators, 3 sets of coordinators. You usually get 2, and that's it. And the second one better work. So whoever he picks, and, you know, Adam Peters made it very clear, it's going to be Dan Quinn's pick on both of them. They better work out. It better work out next year. There better be much more continuity on the offensive side, and they're much, you know, just improvement across the board on the defensive side, because it just was a complete disaster. You know, it was a fast disaster with Witt. It was a slower disaster with Quinn, but you know, they were a little better. Yes, they were a little better. They gave up a 98-yard, 17-play, 12-minute drive in Minnesota when Dan Quinn was calling the defense. So, yes, it was slower. They still got scored on. So, you know,
it took longer to score, basically, was the difference.
Yeah, it took longer to score, but yeah, they still got scored on. And right, they still didn't turn anybody over, you know, the whole season, right? So, so they've got to figure that out on the defensive side. That's not all scheme. That's not all – that's personnel. They got to get better players on the field next year that can do more things to help them win games.
David Aldridge on Grant and Danny. So let's just go further down this path of what lies ahead then. Along with the column, you talk about the flexibility, the versatility needed, everybody looking in the mirror here. What do you think is the right play in terms of Daniels' future? And if Cliff was not aligned with their vision of what's best for business for five, then what is exactly? What do you think they want to see? Is it more under center? Is it more turn around hand to the running back and not have a run option for the quarterback? Like, what do you think this will and should look like?
I mean, I think using Jaden's legs should be a bug and not a feature. That should not be like the default we go to 12 times a game. Even though he can do it. Can he do it? Yes, he can do it. We saw him do it last year. He made incredible plays last year. This year, he tried to do the same plays, and he got hurt three times. Okay? So, you know, this is simple. I mean, to me, this is simple. You get a franchise quarterback once every 20 years or so if you're lucky. For them, it took longer. He's a franchise quarterback. They're building a $3.8 billion stadium because of Jaden Daniels. There's nothing else that's causing that. Okay? You've got to be smart about this. And so I don't think it's like you're putting him in bubble wrap and telling him never to drop back and to never run. You're telling him maybe you get somebody in here from the Shanahan tree where they throw the ball a lot, but they also run it a lot, you know, and they continue to run the ball. And so that when it's done at its best, and I don't think that's not unreasonable, guys. I mean, I love Cliff Kingsbury's offense. He's the only guy that was running it. Okay. There's 27 guys running Shanahan. Well, okay. You tried it with Cliff. It didn't work. Go to the one of the 27 guys that run the Shanahan offense and see if that works. I don't think Jaden Daniels isn't going to be able to pick up the offense that everybody in the NFL uses. Like, I find that kind of hard to believe. By all accounts, he's an incredibly hard worker. He's incredibly diligent. He watches a ton of film. I think he'll be able to pick the offense up. I don't think this is going to be that big a deal.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure there are that many offenses he couldn't pick up. You know, I don't think it's, you got to cater something to him. Like, this is a guy
that
can be a chameleon and can do it a lot of different ways. What did you make of, you know, the endorsement from him? Maybe mattered less because that's pretty common, but they do have a very, very close relationship.
Sure.
Cliff was a big Daniels guy before they drafted him. And then the tweet from his mother, I found really interesting, a clear kind of shot across the bow endorsement after the story had come out that Cliff was in some trouble and at odds with the GM. I found that really interesting.
It doesn't surprise me. I mean, he was very successful with Cliff. You know, I don't... Why would that surprise you that they wanted to keep going with Cliff? Because he ran an offense that was perfect for Jaden, you know, allowed Jaden to do the thing, to play the way he's played his entire life, right? He's been in shotgun almost all of his life. I get it. That doesn't surprise me. I mean,
I'm not surprised, but you don't see it's not just the mom, it's like a manager of sorts, like basically endorse a coaching candidate very often publicly for a quarterback.
You don't, but that doesn't mean it doesn't happen privately. It happens, you know, like, so, no, I mean, I'm not saying, look, is it, a lot of people are on social media that weren't on social media 10 years ago. I don't know what to tell you. That's how people communicate with each other now. It's not my method, but that's how a lot of people communicate with each other now. So, It doesn't shock me. Like, again, if you go back and look at the history of this league, Peyton Manning having Tom Moore as his offensive coordinator for 15 years, that's the exception. That's not the rule. The rule is most quarterbacks go through a lot of offensive coordinators over the course of their career. Patrick Mahomes has been really lucky that Andy Reid's been his coach and his de facto OC this whole time. That's great. Doesn't usually roll that way. Doesn't usually happen that way. Usually, I mean, the Commanders were a dumpster fire, so it's probably a bad example, but how many quarterbacks has Terry McLaurin played for? How many offensive coordinators has Terry McLaurin played for? You know, that's usually what happens even on the good teams because guys leave. Successful teams, successful OCs, they move on. And so, I guess a little unusual. I don't think it portends anything disastrous going forward. I think that, you know, I think people are, I tend to view most adults as adults. I think we all have bosses, and then sometimes those bosses leave, and now you have new bosses. Most people don't quit their jobs. Most people try to work it out with the new boss, you know. And I suspect that Jaden Daniels will try to work it out with the new boss, whoever that is. And I think they will do fine because he's really good. And I think they will hire a very dynamic offensive coordinator. And we'll see about the receiver room and the tight end room because those need upgrades to me. I think those are priorities, but they may have to spend so much capital getting the defense straight that they may not be able to do that next year. But I do think that I think the offensive line's pretty good. I think the running backs room's pretty good. I don't think it's bad. I don't think the receivers room is terrible. I just think they need to add to it. They need a player or two. And I think they need to sign a tight end. I do. That's David's opinion. Because I don't think there's a tight end there that scares other defenses right now. But Jaden's the guy. He's the spark plug, and he makes it all work. And I think if they, with a couple of tweaks next year, he can make it work again.
D.A., what do you make of the Jordan Schultz report that one of the issues was the meddling of the general manager with coaches, coordinators about playing time, personnel, and the like?
I don't doubt for a moment that someone told him that. I would say this. Adam Peters and Dan Quinn have made it very clear that they are a field entry, as they say in horse racing. You get one, you get the other. They're joined at the hip. They do not do things that the other person disagrees with very much. So I would just say this. I'm not casting aspersions on the report. The report is the report. What I'm saying is that it is convenient that this story is coming out now after coaches have been fired.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to know where it came from. What I had said earlier in the show is it almost certainly came from somebody who's close to one of these coaches, but because someone's telling you about someone after a divorce doesn't mean they're wrong either, right?
It doesn't mean they're wrong, but I'll just say this. If this was a problem all year, why is it that we didn't hear about it until after people were fired? If it was a problem all year, if somebody said, hey, I can't cook, I can't do my job because the front office keeps messing me up. Okay. That would have been a story in week 8.
Right.
You know, it could have been a story in week 12. The catalyst seems to be the coaches got fired and now there's reports of dysfunction. That doesn't mean, to your point, it doesn't mean those reports are wrong.
Yeah.
It just means that they have to be viewed in the context of coaches getting fired and maybe trying to explain why they got fired. And I don't think it's unreasonable to kind of view that then through the lens of, okay, these are people that want to work again in the NFL, and they have to explain what happened in Washington. Well, that's what happened in Washington. The GM meddled. Okay. I mean, maybe. This is a very strong, analytically driven department. A year ago, when we thought Adam Peters hung the moon, everybody loved that. Everybody loved that he was hiring every analytics person under the sun to evaluate everything that was going on in the football field. And they were going to be proactive about the players they brought in here. And they weren't going to sit back and idly do nothing. And they're going to be, you know, this is a guy that knows players and he's hiring other people that know players. 12 months later, after 5-12, they're meddling. So, which is, I get it. You got to win. Got to win.
Flirting and or harassment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, when you don't win, everything's fair game.
Yeah, when I do it, it's harassment.
Yeah, when good-looking guy does it, it's flirting.
5-12, everything's fair game. Yeah. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying everything's fair game when you're 5-12.
David Aldridge, senior columnist. Check out his column in The Athletic. Commander's future depends on flexibility from Daniels Quinn Peters. Always excellent to get you on the show, buddy. Thank you.
Anytime, fellas. Thank you.
Look forward to chatting again soon. There is the Hall of Famer, David Aldridge, on Grant and Danny. Our double play about 25 minutes from now at 3:45. Sam Cosmi said something pretty interesting on the station yesterday about the offense and about Cliff that I think we should revisit. Let's do that next on G&D. In 15 minutes, we'll give you a double play at 3:45. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. And in a half hour, right at 4 o'clock, ahead of the Blitz, we're giving away Caps tickets. Plus, next hour, Danny, I want to float a name of an OC candidate who's in the building already that I think should be a consideration and would actually make a lot of sense as a possible hire for Washington. We'll do that coming up in about an hour. But it was brought to my attention. I still have not actually heard this audio. But it was brought to my attention by somebody that Sam Cosmi was on with B. Mitch and Finley yesterday. And Cosmi was asked about Cliff's offense, and they were talking about Cliff's departure extensively, you know, at a different points in time. And this was part of that conversation where I don't have my phone on me, by the way. Darius just told me to check my text message. My phone's in the room where you are.
Oh, it was over there before.
But at least we have these microphones that you could talk
microphone
to me
glass.
On. Yeah. What would you like to tell me?
That's so funny. I just looked over and saw your phone over here.
Yeah.
That's so terrible.
You won't text him. Radio.
No, at least we don't have a microphone you could talk to
microphone
me
glass
at any point.
What I was trying to tell you was that JP asked.
You won't text me.
I'll text you now.
Could you send him a letter?
It's such a normal way to communicate during the show. Just send me a text.
JP asked Cosmi what he thinks the offense needs to look like next year.
Oh, okay.
That's what
let me tell everyone that real quick. JP asked Cosmi what he thinks the offense should look like next year, according to a text message that I haven't received yet, but that is in my inbox from Dad Dameron.
Grant, I just texted you.
Yeah. Hold on, Darius. Don't play it. I'm going to text you.
Let me just text
you. Will
Grant.
You bring me my phone really quick so I can text Darius to play the audio? If you guys don't mind. Ryan, run my phone in really quickly. Just real, because it's plugged in over there.
Hey, Grant.
And then, can you text there? So you have your phone?
No, I'll text the chat.
Text
hey, Grant.
Me.
It's Danny.
Yeah, text
from
me.
From the show.
Thank you. Here's Ryan, everybody.
How are you, Ryan?
My phone.
How is it going?
Okay, so let me text Derek.
Send. Did you get my text?
Not yet.
I just sent it. Let me know when you get it.
So the problem is in this studio, we don't always get text really fast.
Oh, it's the group chat. Did you get mine?
Not yet.
Oh, seriously, man.
Still nothing. I'm going to send Darius, play the audio now if you could.
I'll text him too, just to whoever gets first.
So let him know. Darius. All right, so I'm sending this.
I'll do talk to text.
Darius, play the audio. There, I sent the text.
Hey, Darius, play the audio.
Yeah, so for me, I think what's crucial is for us to really establish an identity, especially in the run game. I think we showed a lot of potential this last season. You know, and I think there's a lot of things that I think for me, if we're able to key some of the key pieces in the whole line, that we're going to be probably one of the best on lines in the NFL. And I felt like we were this last season. if they can rely on us in the run game, especially, you know, I think there's some things that we can do that's really special in that category. Like I said, once you establish a run, it opens up so much more play action,
yep.
You know, and when you have to go drop back pass, you do. But I really want to establish the identity of the run. Like, who are we? You know, that was the biggest thing that, like, I felt that we could have definitely improved on going into next season. You know, you know, whatever. I just want to me personally slow down a little bit with the offense, just to dissect a little things better when it came to on the field. You know, but I mean, it's going to be different now. So
I thought that was super candid.
Yeah.
And I don't know honestly why that isn't a bigger deal or like hasn't gotten more run or why everyone's not talking about those comments. I had not heard anything about them. But somebody texted me and was like, "Hey, did you hear Cosme with B. Mitch and Finley?" And that's him saying two things there. One, find me an offensive lineman. I'll find you a guy that wants to run the ball more. But he's basically saying he wants the identity of the team to be, you know, ground it and pound it, run the ball. Like, okay, he's an interior lineman. I get that. You expect that. But the last comment there, if you play the very end of that clip, was fascinating. He wants to slow down. They are the fastest operating team that run more plays faster than anybody else. They're never in a huddle. They're almost 80% of the time no huddle. Nobody else in the league is no huddle even 25% of the time. It's not just unique. It is literally they are one of a kind in this regard. And this is a player, this is a captain type, this is a Pro Bowl caliber guard saying he'd like to slow down. He would like to have more time to figure out what the defense is doing between snaps. I found that really, really interesting. Again, text Darius real quick, let him know.
Let me see.
I want to play just the end of that clip here from B. Mitch and Finley.
Talk to text Darius. Play the end of the clip from B. Mitch and Finley. Oh, no, it said Finley.
It's Finley. L-A-Y.
F-I-N-L-A-Y.
Ryan Finley, the former quarterback from NC State.
Send.
But I really wanted to establish the identity of the run. Like, who are we? You know, that was the biggest thing that, like, I felt that we could have definitely improved on going into next season. You know, you know, whatever. I just want to me personally slow down a little bit with the offense, just to dissect a little things better when it came to on the field. You know, but I mean, it's going to be different now. So
that is telling, man,
isn't it?
To dissect things on the field. And if you're Dan Quinn and you're calling people into your office to just get a feel, hey, Sam, how do you feel? What do you think? Hey, you know, Laramie, what do you think? If they're telling you, hey, we want to run it more, or hey, we're too fast, we need to slow down, and that's part of your gripe, that's part of your
data
issue.
Point, yeah.
I mean, I think that matters in some of these exit interviews.
Yeah, as you said, a lineman wanting to run it more, news at 11. I'm all set there. But the slow down part is the, whoa, hold the phone.
Like, because that is the Kingsbury staple.
Yes.
That is basically being like, Cliff does this thing more than anybody else, and I'd like to do less of that.
Yeah.
It's basically saying, I'd like to try something else that isn't a Cliff thing.
Well, when it works, when you get to the line quick and the defense isn't organized, they've got to go with something vanilla, right? They've got to go with the same call they just had because they don't have time to get everybody lined up, etc. But when they kind of have you scouted and you're going fast, you actually put the offense at a disadvantage because now you don't let the quarterback, the center, the guard, the tackles, everybody communicate going, okay, 55 is Mike, so if he rushes, we're sliding this way. No, we're sliding, we're doing loosey, slide protection that way. But if he you lose that ability. Right, to dissect, and that's kind of his point there. If you're dictating when you're going fast, you're at an advantage. When you're not, and they weren't this year. Remember, think of the number of times that Kevin O'Connell is the sort of trump card in this regard. He just invented something where two guys that were not going to play would trot onto the field. The referee stands right in front of Tyler Biadasz going, nope, I'm the letter T. No one gets to move. And they waited 25, 30 seconds, and there's you lose the ability to have that advantage anymore when you do it this way. So if you're dictating, it's awesome. When you're not, it's a disadvantage.
That should be making the rounds more than it is. You know, you're not getting someone to come out that says they dislike Cliff. It's not going to happen. It's not like Bienemy where players all over the place were like, anybody got a microphone? I'd like to complain. I've got something to say. Like, I think they really liked the guy. They liked Kingsbury as a dude. They liked the worker and all those things. But that's pretty stark from a leader on the offensive side of the ball. Let's go to Elijah in D.C. wants to hop in on some changes that could be coming for the offense. What's up, Elijah? How are you? Elijah, you there? You're live on the radio.
Oh, I had you on mute, man. Sorry.
Well, that is not the way to do it.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not it. Not it. Sorry.
You're good.
I'm with my 4-year old, so I got to be here.
Oh,
quick.
Let's go.
But no, man.
What does your 4-year old think about the decision?
Is he into it?
She doesn't know. but dig, man. I think they should take the Peyton Manning and Gary Kubiak approach. When Peyton pulled up to Denver, he was primarily a shotgun quarterback. And Gary Kubiak was the one that said, I want to go under center and let's move this play action thing. And I'm just for in that perfect world, I would love to bring them in as consultants for this type of situation, this transition, because I think I loved the Peyton Manning when he was on his way out from Denver. And what I think it allowed him to do is they didn't completely can it. They allowed him to go under center, get a good look, because all the magic was pre-snap. He was able to go under center, then he could back up to shotgun, which now puts a little bit more pressure on the defense. How you standing from the quarterback position, that positioning means everything, and the defense is only keying in on those. So if you get Jaden Daniels naturally rolling out on a play action with his types, with his wheels and what he can do naturally, that's going to put you in a bind defensively.
Agreed.
When he's up under center and then he gives that ball, even think about Kirk when Jay Gruden, I would love to hear y'all pick his brain on this. I loved when Jay Gruden was able to get play action for Kirk. And I just think if they can just bring some of those things when Five is getting on his horse and he's moving his legs with a Debo crossing the field, that completely changes the outlook of your offense. You don't have to go as fast, because I always call in and say if Washington was facing a defense that was prepared, who and the defensive coordinator went to all his guys and say, look, I need all of my formations. I need all my guys on the field when I say it's time to go. Only the teams who didn't know how to prepare and wasn't ready on the game day, what Washington was doing, was getting beat. Can't finesse
the
no
tempo
good
thing. I think is fascinating.
Appreciate you,
too. Appreciate you, Elijah. Thanks
good
for
call.
The call, buddy. The tempo part of this is really interesting. It goes back to, I remember having a conversation with, I don't remember if it was Mike or Kyle Shanahan, but it was one of the Shanahans years ago when they were here. And the discussion was basically about, why don't they run tempo more? Like, you preach tempo. It's like your number one used word at the podium. Might have been Kyle. Like, how is it that the game comes and then it's never fast enough for you? It's never, you know, you don't really run no huddle. And at this point, they were having a lot of success, like, up-tempo, no huddle. But we would see it, like, once every couple of weeks or something. And the point was, we're not good enough defensively to put them in a bind by going no huddle. Now, that's a little bit antiquated to today's NFL because that's not really the way it's viewed. But Kliff does not really care about that problem. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, your defense be damned. And he was kind of the same way as a head coach, not to this extreme necessarily, but he was number one still in terms of usage of no huddle, muddle huddle, moving quickly. And if you're Dan Quinn, a defensive-minded head coach, you're going, bro, you are killing us. We're not good as it is. We've already got a lot of problems, and you're making it harder for me the way that you're operating. And I just don't think that Kliff concerned himself with that as much as maybe Quinn would have wanted. But it's interesting to hear Cosmi come back to that tempo thing.
100%. I mean, again, I don't know how much of a gripe he would have had last year with it, but now when it's not working, it really feels
well. And people
fruitless
say that,
and helpless.
And I'm guilty of this too sometimes, where I go, none of this was a problem when you were 12-5, and that's precisely true. That's the case in life with a lot of things.
No, of course.
And like, you could be doing the exact same thing, and no one's going to care or pick nits at it. Like, you know, stylistically speaking, I can operate in a way, and if we're getting 10 share ratings, it's perfectly fine. Doesn't mean it's the best practice. Doesn't mean it's what I should be doing. If we're getting a 1.5 or a 3 share or whatever, all of a sudden, doing the exact same thing, our boss can call me out on it. Hey, you've always gotten here at 1:56 for a 2:00 show. I didn't, I was doing that 2 years ago and we were crushing it. Yeah, and that's why I didn't bother you. But you're not anymore.
Right. And so it's not to dismiss it. It's more to say, It's probably especially frustrating when you're doing it, you're losing, and it's not going well. It's probably worse than doing it the regular way, if that makes any sense, where the advantage you had, not only is it gone, but it puts you in a bind. And a player as smart as Cosmi knows that. I think that's kind of the theory there.
Our double plays next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. We are giving away Caps tickets today in 20 minutes at 4:00 ahead of the Blitz on Grant and Danny. Driven by your local Washington Honda dealers, it is time for our double play. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. Visit your local Washington area Honda dealer today. Couple of house cleaning items for you. We are out and about on Friday for a field trip.
Pupatella. It is in Chantilly. I love that place. It's awesome. They take such great care of us. Neapolitan pizza. So it is kind of like that. It's thinner, a little chewier crust. It's a gourmet feeling pizza. All the coolest toppings. The best pizza they got there is the mimosa. It's got corn on it. You're going, what are you talking about, Danny? I'm telling you, give it a shot. It's incredible. Appies are really good, and they are wonderful people. I love Pupatella.
You missaid cavatappi, which I think is the
pizza. That's the cavatelli.
Cavatelli?
Caivano. It's a Caivano.
Caivano. Let me pull this up. Yeah, Caivano. You're right. Caivano pizza is the meat lover situation. It's got all the meat you could ever want.
It is delicious.
Sprinkled right onto a delicious pizza.
So it's hard to eat that. Now, I find a way to do it.
Sure, it's hard to eat a pizza.
Well, it's hard to eat because the weight of the meat is so heavy that it weighs the pizza down. You got to fold it.
This is what I do because it is. It's like a flimsy slice of pizza with all the meat, and it's like folding over in weird spots. So what I do is I just turn it into like basically a U so that the edges meet, and then I eat it in that way.
Like Portnoy would not give it a great score because it's not like burnt toast. That's what he wants on crust. He wants like a singed, burnt, charred piece of like flatbread.
Yes.
So that's his scoring style. This would not score that well. It's Neapolitan. It's meant to be like a chewier deal. But yeah, so the integrity when you've got that many meaty toppings on top.
Do you want delicious pizza?
Yes.
Do you want to talk ball?
Yes.
Do you want to hang out with fun people?
Yeah.
Pupatella Pizza, Chantilly, this Friday, our final.
I'm going to have gelato.
One last ride around the sun. The final field trip Friday of this football season for the Grant and Danny radio program. That is on Friday. Also, the Caps play tonight. We're giving away Caps tickets to an upcoming game in the month of January. That's at 4 o'clock. But I do want to point out that I'll be at Capital One Arena tonight. The boys are in action. They are playing the Dallas Stars. They're looking for two straight wins. But it would be big for them to get a couple of points. Logan Thompson and Nett this evening, they're dealing with all the injuries right now.
Mm-hmm.
You see, they put Alexi Protas on IR, so he's out. Still no Tom Wilson, although he was skating again, which is a good sign. And clearly, still no Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Although he skated lately, hadn't he?
But if you would have told me that all three of those guys are going to be out and they would still be playing this level of hockey, I would have taken that sight unseen. A little frustrating that they haven't been better. They're a bubble playoff team at this point. They're going to end up being comfortably in the playoffs if they can get healthy and get on a roll here after the Olympics. But they're kind of just trying to tread water right now. They've handled these injuries very, very well because Justin Sortif coming off of Hattie has been excellent. Ryan Leonard has provided speed and have been really good. Connor McMichael's coming off of 4-apple night. Like, they're doing some really, really good things with the kids. And they've been able to thread the needle on the veterans and the young players kind of molding together the last couple of years.
What's got to happen, man? You need some reinforcements for this roster that you looked up a couple of years ago and you go, man, they are old and slow. And you need the Leonards, the Protas. I know he's hurt now, but some of those guys to kind of step up and step in, and it's happening.
There's less old, less slow than there was certainly a few years ago. All right, time for the double play. Danny, get us going.
Bunch of shows have come and gone, obviously, when something's as major as, say, a Fallout or Stranger Things, you kind of stop what you're doing and do that. But wrapped up Black Rabbit, I gave kind of an early...
I also watched Black Rabbit.
Have you gone through the whole thing?
Saw it all.
The whole deal. This is really well done. So it started slow. There's a major event. I'm not spoiling anything. It sort of centers around one fateful night at this trendy, hip kind of New York restaurant. And you don't know what you don't know when you're watching the initial sort of huge scene, if that makes any sense. There is a robbery that takes place, and it just sort of looks like that's what it is. But we flash back in time. We flash sideways. We kind of go around, and the dramatics and all the things that lead us to that moment are chronicled, documented. It's Jason Bateman as kind of the more ne'er-do-well Jason Bateman. It's struggling for help Jason Bateman. It's floundering Jason Bateman. But he's still hey-budding the bleep out of you, right? He's full Bateman on this thing. Jude Law, I thought, was really good. A bunch of actors that I hadn't seen and
Jude
stuff before.
Jude Law stays really good.
So
Jude Law is a great actor.
I didn't have him categorized that way.
Really?
Yeah, like Jude Law is in stuff.
You ever seen Road to Perdition?
Yeah.
Silly in Road to Perdition.
Jude Law's in things. I had no issue with Jude Law. It's not like I'm not ripping him like he's Keanu Reeves wooden or something or something like that. I've kind of gone, yeah, he's fine. I thought he was outstanding in this as kind of the two-faced sort of dude, right? Where he's the... Hey, everybody's buddy. I'm the coolest guy at the party. I'm keeping everything going. I'm training on the tracks. And then the manic, freaked out, you know, the world's colliding or collapsing around me, the sort of deal. The gangsters in this movie, the show are really good. Overall, highly entertaining watch, Black Rabbit. I think I'm going to go 7.5 carbohydrates. I was very into it, GP.
Yeah, I'll give it 8 carbohydrates because it was one of these that I ripped through as a mini series of 8 episodes or whatever, about 45 to an hour a piece. I mean, over 2 days when I was sick and bedridden, I was like, nope, oh, we're watching another one. Very captivating, very compelling. It's very dark, literally and figuratively. It's shot dark. And it's also just like a dark show.
Yeah.
I think Bateman directed this. I think this is like post Ozark, another Netflix offering for him. It feels like something he directed. It's got like some Ozark vibes to it.
I think that's incredible that like him and I think of Ben Affleck can sort of go from these sorts of deals. Like you think of Jason Bateman as like one of the funniest, you know, kind of a wry, dry sense of humor type dudes who's like, yeah, I'm gonna direct this dark, undertoned, creepy sort of psychological thriller type vibe at times type show. Really, really good that he can do that. Amazing.
Looks like they've listed 3 directors here. Bateman's one of them, though. Laura Linney, who's an actress, also
she was in Ozark. Yeah,
Ozark helped direct this. But yeah, he is super talented as a director. I loved it. It was. It's one of these shows where there aren't enough characters that are totally redeemable for me to like fall in love with the show, if that makes sense.
It does.
It's really hard to love anybody.
We share that where I need somebody to root for, even if they're the bad guy. Like again, Breaking Bad, one of the great shows of all time. I'm rooting for this mass murdering drug dealer named Walter White, you know, but like that's the brilliance of the show.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Well, people kind of know generally that he's...
I didn't know he was a murderer.
You didn't know that?
No.
Pretty bad dude. He's the one who knocks.
I guess I won't watch it now.
That's been out there. You should. Yeah. But like, even, you know what I mean? You don't have to be a good person for me to root for. I need someone to root for. The shows totally. Where I don't have anybody, I kind of go, I don't enjoy it.
There is this element of character in these dramas, though, sometimes, where it's like, whoopsie-daisy. Dude, you don't have to keep screwing everything up.
Yeah.
And this show is that on steroids, mm-hmm. or steroids.
Steroids.
As Ryan would say. Yeah. But... You know, like Monday you did this, and Tuesday let's just stop being an idiot. And then Tuesday we do something worse, but then Wednesday we've got everything fixed, but now we just screwed up again.
Yeah, hey bud, I got us out of the debt. Oh, I planned a jewelry heist. Ah!
Exactly. So it's just like, why?
Damn,
why does it have to be this way? There's a little bit of that where you kind of, how many times do you suck me back in before I just start saying, okay, you're an idiot, I can't root for you anymore. But there's a lot to like about that show.
But my quick closing thing is, again, there's a bunch of actors below the line. So it's Jude Law, Jason Bateman. I haven't heard of a single one of these other guys or gals, but it's going to be, I guarantee you, it's going to be the thing where you'll see in 6 months, oh my God, that was the guy from that show. And they're all going to take off. So many great acting performances in this thing from a bunch of unknowns.
But this show is, to me, like now in the 2020s, what we get that didn't happen 20 years ago. It's like,
exactly.
It's just an 8-episode smashola. Mm-hmm. This used to be a bunch of people that would be making a movie.
Right.
They're not making movies right now.
Uh-huh.
They're just making you 8 hours of content on Netflix.
Where you can tell a little bit longer of a story.
Yeah, it drops. Yeah. It's gone. They never think about it again. And for you, for a lot of people, it's, you know, 3 weeks of watching TV. For me, it was 2 days of way too much time in my bed being sick. But like, that is what we have now. It's like, there's 1,000 shows like this, of which you and I haven't heard of enough of them and haven't seen enough of them. But you get into it and you go, damn, that was a good ride.
Prestige show, really well done. It's the power of the streaming service, man. It's awesome.
The Beltway Blitz is next. Let's give away some Caps tickets. And then coming up at 4:25 or so, I'm going to give you my idea for a coaching candidate without having to look very far for the Commanders. That would make a lot of sense to be their new play caller. That's next on The Fan.